wondrous. And now the moment that the world has been waiting for, our weather forecast for Lincoln from Gibraltar with Gabriella Peralta.
Okay, so the weather is highs of 10 degrees centigrade, lows of 8 degrees centigrade. It would be a cloudy and grey day with outbreaks of light rain in the morning.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And an exquisite end to the year, Gabriella. I mean, this is, in a sense, that's one of the reasons why you were such one of our top journalism graduates from the University of Lincoln, and now, of course, Gibraltar Chronicle's finest. I mean, David, that the delivery of the weather forecast, you might as well just pack up and go home now, really. I mean, after that...
Polished, Alex, absolutely polished.
Seamless, absolutely.
Thank you, Gabriella, yeah.
Thank you.
That's very true. I mean, you know, Phil Leaders, bless him, in Los Angeles. Get well soon, Phil. He's in great pain. I said, it's all right, just relax. Don't worry about the whole thing. We can cope. Gabriella's got the tiller. She's
actually, there was a bit of mist rolling across the wolds this morning, maybe a bit reminiscent of Santa Monica Beach, but the temperature was a little bit colder
just
here.
A slight change. That's the important thing. Full job title, Dr. David Cobham, Dean of Transnational Education.
That's right. So responsible for seeking and setting up partnerships with universities around the world. Oh. And great to talk to Gabriella in Gibraltar, where University of Lincoln's always looking to expand its reputation and footprint around the world. And interested in the perspective from Gabriella.
And what better way than those 3 miles of rock in Gibraltar, where they have more festivals per square centimetre of the population than any other. I mean, this year we've already sort of regaled the listener, Gabriella, with tales of the magic festival, the music festival, the whole range of festivals, the literary festival.
I did forget a festival.
No.
Yes, I think I forgot a few, but actually I think that evening we had the Festival of Lights right after the magic festival, which is what we call the switching on of the Christmas lights in town. But we put a stage, singers...
And call it a festival. We could do that at Lincoln, actually.
Yeah, call it a festival.
That's
a
festival of lights. Switch on the lights.
Put on a show.
Call it a festival of lights.
Do it right here.
We also have the Festival of Colours.
Right.
In the summer.
Yeah.
We have the Electronic Music Festival. I forgot about all these festivals.
Oh, wow.
We have a lot.
Certainly something to look forward to in 2018 as we go completely festival crazy, which is wondrous stuff there. David, clearly we have already featured folk back in the day, back in September. In fact, we were connected when we had the Gibraltarian link. But of course, don't say Gibraltar. You see, even then,
another name
says,
drop.
No, don't do that. KDU Penang. If anybody is listening in Padang, it's probably about 4 p.m. in the afternoon, I believe.
That's right.
Just after 4:05
coming
in the afternoon.
The end of the working day.
So sorted through for that, basically. I can confirm that because you were just connecting with them a few moments ago, actually. But it went really, really well, I thought, in terms of the sort of package. I mean, Matthew Crago seemed to be beside himself with joy.
He was beside himself. It was a fantastic opportunity. And for Gabriella, we took some of our students from Lincoln across to Penang. They joined in with a student conference over there, but they also were able to have a little bit of downtime and enjoy travelling and looking around Penang itself. And that's the first of what we hope are going to be a whole series of opportunities for our students to travel and get international experiences and welcome international students from around the world to come to Lincoln for short programmes, summer schools or semesters and whole years of study.
Some, Gabriella, may even appear on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition and speak to you. It's a possibility, isn't it, David?
Is it?
Yeah.
It is.
It's great.
But tell me, Gabriella, do you in Gibraltar, do you suffer from the same electronic illumination of houses that seems to be taking over the UK, where everybody feels the need to decorate their house with lights that we used to just put inside on trees?
To make sure that Santa Claus finds his way.
We've always had that, but we don't have. Well, a lot of Gibraltar is, because it's so small, everyone lives in apartments.
Yes.
So we have big blocks, basically, of houses. So most people put lights on their balconies.
Which can look very effective, actually, can't it?
Yeah, I think at least every block has a few people in the balconies. We don't decorate as much for Christmas as we do, I think, for National Day on our balconies.
National Day, they go crazy. It's that red, white, all over the place.
We go crazy. We put We put UK flags and Gibraltar flags.
And yet, curiously, a distinctive absence of Spanish flags, I've noticed, Gabriella. You know,
I wonder why.
Well, it's very true. David was commenting on whether you had any thoughts about Brexit.
Oh, crikey, the B word so early in the morning. We're sort of lurching ever closer, aren't we? I just wondered in the last couple of weeks as we move into stage two of negotiations, how are people talking and reporting on Brexit in Gibraltar?
Well, Gibraltar voted, I think, 96% to stay in the EU.
Mm. So fairly firm decisiveness on that line.
That is a clear majority.
Exactly.
That's what we used to call a clear majority.
Precisely.
Yeah, I think it was practically no one voted to leave. Mm. So,
and those that did probably made a mistake. There we are.
We are put up with the decision, you know, we're going to follow the UK and whatever they decide. Are we exactly happy about it? The general consensus, if you talk to someone in town, would be no. Are we willing to go forward and follow the UK and their decision? Yes. So we are following, we are tentatively seeing what decisions are being made, if they will be made, and how they will be made. And we are hoping to see how Gibraltar factors in many of those decisions. Mm. Because after all, we don't want to, I think the big worry for us at the moment is being left out. I know we're small, but we don't like to be left out, especially if we are now undertaking something that we didn't want to do.
Mm. And those are just some of the words which mean that Gabriella Peralta should be the next Prime Minister of the British Isles, I feel. You know, I mean, the delivery of that, you know, that's joyous.
Well, vacancies are appearing almost as we speak.
Exactly.
It's only a matter of time.
Always a matter of time before you're already the Midweek Drive Morning Edition's official Gibraltarian correspondent. You fly the flag for Lincoln, even when you fly over Lincoln to actually go to Manchester. I can't believe that, still never mind. We will hopefully connect again in 2018, but before we actually move any further, Frodo, what state of consciousness is he in this morning? This is the pug, by the way, David.
Oh, he's my dad this morning.
Oh.
Well, he's in another part of the house, my dad, but I heard a pitter-patter of feet.
Mm.
So, I don't know, he might go for a walk soon.
Good heavens.
He's probably quite awake. he's more awake when he's in my parents' house because he's got more people. You know, to follow around, whereas in my house he gets a bit bored of me.
Well, there we are. That's again, I think we've put things to rights as far as Frodo the pug in Gibraltar is actually concerned. Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic series of links with us in 2017?
Yes, I have. I look forward to 2018.
Exactly. Well, first Midweek Drive Morning Edition is actually the day after we come back from the London Boat Show, so that's the 11th of January. So I think, David, I have actually suggested to Matthew he could actually purchase a Sunseeker for the College of Arts, but I don't think he's going for it, strangely enough.
It would sit nicely on the marina just outside the building.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking, you know, we could use that. We could obviously then move to Jersey, Gibraltar. We'd have those access. We'd go on a cruise.
It would save a fortune on airfares.
Precisely. Exactly. Ecologically sound as well.
Like the Royal Yachts.
Exactly. So I think we need to sort of just gradually nudge that through the system, really.
Absolutely.
Maybe a letter of support from yourself, Gabriella, saying, dear Professor Crago, have you considered a Sunseeker yacht for the College of Arts to enable us to more effectively sort of develop links with Gibraltar and so on? Just back to the balance, you know? Anyway, we will speak to you in 2018. Gabriella, happy holidays, have a great time, happy Christmas and all the rest of the sort of bits and pieces. And that's pretty much it. Would you like to wish happy holidays to us in Spanish? But I just thought perhaps not. It would be just
No, I'll stick to English.
Yeah, we are. You see. Good positive thinking as ever. And the momentary pause. Finally, they arrive. It's all right. Santa Claus is coming to town. He was just delayed for a few seconds.
He's coming. Watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why, Santa Claus is coming to town.
He's coming, coming, he's coming, coming.
He's making a list, checking it twice, he's gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town.
He's coming.
Yeah.
coming.
He is coming to town. Message from Emma Tinson. Alex, I'm so sorry. My phone has just died. Don't you hate it when that just happens?
Always at the wrong time.
She dropped it on the floor, and it's sadly now not turning on. Oh, well. She doesn't have another line she can call on either. No, Emma Tinson. Sometimes you just wonder, really. I mean, you know, and there she is going to be looking after traffic and travel for LBC. I mean, it's just, you know... Don't drop the phone ever, please.
We're so dependent on these electronic devices, Alex, aren't we?
It's a strange and you know, wondrous world in which we have it. Okay, coming up in the second hour of the programme, we've actually got the wonderful band Orphala, an Orphala good band. I know, it's very strange. a group of siblings. If we can get through the interview without having puns about Orphala, I think it'll be pretty much amazing. But we have Abby Orphala, Louise Orphala, and Matt Orphala, who, according to Dave Cash and BBC Radio Kent, are an incredibly talented trio. Well, I thought we might as well just have a little smidgen of Orphala with this little number. It's Reaching Out to You, Orphala.
see that this is me reaching out to you. And I hope you'll see that this is me reaching out to you.
A nice, jolly little number there. I hope you'll see this is me reaching out to you. And we are doing that, David, on a regular basis, globally, transnationally, and in all manner of ways.
Well, I really enjoyed that, Alex, and look forward to speaking to them later on.
Absolutely. With the words, apologies, I'm too sick to go on tonight, sort of terrified about the pain I am in, I had to immediately respond to Phil Leonis and saying, Phil, be well. Be well, Phil. And we send them out positively, even though in Los Angeles it's now coming around to 18 minutes past midnight. So hopefully he's asleep, you know, because I like the sort of notion of him sort of even tuned in pain. It's just not... It's no problem from our point of view. It just means Richard Fitzwilliams has had to rip up his original schedule and start completely from scratch. But there's no bitterness there, Richard, because, you know, you're a professional and you can cope with these kind of things.
Well, I miss it because I was hoping that this would have been the ideal opportunity, which we may not have now. We won't have before the Globes to do the predictions. What I thought is if I could send you mine and then maybe you could pass it on.
That's exactly what I was thinking. We can actually return to the sealed ballot that we've used in previous years.
Oh, yes, the sealed ballot, yes. Very good idea. And I've also got two films now that they, by magic, as it were, have appeared in front of me. It's wise to take precautions.
As ever. And before that, of course, can I formally introduce you again to Dr. David Cobham, Dean of Transnational Education here at the University of Lincoln. I think when you last spoke, David, you might have actually been head of computer science.
I may well have been, actually, yes. But nice to speak to you again, Richard. And how are you?
Very nice to speak to you. And I understand that you'd also like a chat on royal matters, which have been...
Don't know where he got that from. It's amazing. The powers of Richard Fitzwilliams.
Read our minds, yes.
Telepathy gone crazy.
Absolutely. Well, if you want to launch straight there, Richard, I mean, I noticed this morning in the press there's another little flurry of activity around Meghan and whether she should be encouraged or prevented from engaging in political activities and that whole issue of do we like our royals to be political or strictly independent handshaking.
Isn't her fiance actually one of the guest editors on that other radio show that happens pretty much about this time? I think it's called Today or something, or Yesterday or something.
There is something like that. Yeah, it's called Yesterday.
Yesterday's news.
Guest editor.
Exactly.
Editor on Yesterday. No. It's perfectly clear when it comes to the monarch as head of state. The powers are signing bills into law, opening parliament and so, weekly audiences with the prime minister and so forth, and to be advised, encouraged and warned. The monarch, and Charles will, when he becomes king, will observe this just as his mother has, though of course it's different in a different era, but there's no doubt at all that that won't alter. There is and would be a problem with any member of the royal family, especially a senior member of the royal family, and Meghan will know this perfectly well, making overtly political comments. The fact that when she wasn't, she gave her views on Donald Trump and has on other issues. I mean, it isn't the point, because everybody knows perfectly well that the dream of becoming a princess and also the wife of the world's most eligible royal bachelor, I mean, it was hardly something she had thought lightly. Mm. At the period of time when, you know, over the career she's built up, which is very high profile, she may very well have made a lot of comments politically. I don't think that she has. As far as I know, Trump is the only one. We know that there are certain issues, gender equality and diversity. They are important issues, of course, for our societies. So expect something on those in which she would be able to campaign on. But what I see is the two becoming a dynamic duo, both nationally and...
Robin and Batman.
Well, no, precisely, because, I mean, what you'll have... Firstly, we know that Meghan will be joining the foundation, the Royal Foundation of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, and Prince Harry, and that will also be Princess Meghan, of course, or Duke and Duchess of Sussex. It will be, in fact, that will be the name, because this is almost certainly going to be the title that will be bestowed by the Queen when they marry. That is the springboard for doing good and charitable activities, but on a vast scale, because one of the advantages of being royal is that you can lobby at the top. So whether it's William lobbying President Xi of China on behalf of the Tusk Trust to try and stop the illegal ivory trade, or whether it's Harry and his famous relationship with the Obamas for Invictus. This is the sort of doing good on a scale that, you know, just wouldn't occur in most. You have to be it's the level also of, you know, George Clooney and Angelina Jolie, if you look at the film world. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt that is what she will. She said in that interview, which I thought showed the charming chemistry, it was a change. She would be giving up acting, but she is an activist too, and that will be her role, as well as, of course, Harry's spouse.
I mean, it's a fantastic platform for charitable work, for promoting issues like that. I wonder, Richard, if there's a generational thing here. I mean, it does seem as though younger people are perhaps a little bit more accepting of the younger royals having that sort of profile.
I just hope she can remember that her grandmama-in-law was one of the fine folk who actually laid the foundation stone of this very University of Lincoln back in 1997. Was it six? 96. You're quite right.
Maybe she was here in 96. Well. Maybe the cement didn't dry and sort of.
They always like to work up to the ultimate scenario there, so I think it's only right.
But I do wonder if younger people are perhaps a little bit less concerned about royals taking that sort of platform.
I think the platform will be. It's an interesting point about the ages. I think the campaigning aspect, and one of the things that strikes me with the royal family this year is that I would never have believed that Prince Harry, certainly, William and Harry both, of course, spoke so openly about the way their mother's death had affected them. But I certainly, two interviews by Harry in The Telegraph and in Newsweek, I mean, this really was bearing his soul, talking about seeking counselling, going into trauma and talking in some depth about it, and this was the aim was to help others. I wouldn't have believed that interviews quite as frank as that would have been given. And I think this was to communicate with young people. And I do think one of the encouraging signs these days and for some time has been a totally different issue of attitude on social issues, young people. And they're talking about things that certainly my generation wouldn't have dreamed of talking about, and in circumstances which are so much more sympathetic and so much more understanding. And I'm sure that Meghan, not only aware of that, but also can be a spokesperson, but without treading, obviously, into grounds that will be partly political, which I'm sure she wouldn't dream of doing, and Harry knows the danger of that as well. And also, of course, she will be guided on the royal protocol, which will be difficult from time to time, because remember, the royals are going to be having a senior member of the royal family who's a big star in her own right. That hasn't happened previously. And coming to terms with that may be difficult both for Meghan in some cases, but Harry is there to support her and guide her, and William and Kate also know the ropes. And this is so different from the situation of Diana, who, even just thinking of one tiny example, when she spent her first Christmas with the royals, nobody told her don't buy expensive presents, so she apparently turned up with cashmere sweaters and so forth.
Hashtag embarrassed. Sorry.
That's true, I'm afraid. But it shouldn't have happened.
Ah, well, I'm sure it'll work out splendidly in good time. So what, Richard, have you brought to us from the celluloid wonderments of your film critical world?
Well, actually, it's a good phrase to introduce it, because The Greatest Showman is a terrific and very, very enjoyable show, and it's lovely to have a chance of chatting about it, because I didn't expect to. It's directed by Michael Gracey, and the story of the rise of one of the greatest show business entrepreneurs of all time, T.P. Barnum, named synonymous with the circus, his own version of the American dream as he's rags to riches. And you've got Hugh Jackman, and he's got charisma in spades, and it's an excellent casting there, because the mix of ambition and magnetism, there you have it. We follow his courtship of the wealthy Charity, played by Michelle Williams, who's always absolutely delightful. Remember her in Manchester by the Sea, a scene that sears me to the brain and just remembering it, and also the ups and downs of his early career. We don't see many performing animals, and the ones we do see are computer-generated for obvious reasons these days. One flaw in the movie, though, it's barbaric to us, but in the 19th century it was quite common to exhibit humans with unusual attributes as curiosities or originals. But since Barnum specialized in this, the film rightly ensures they're given their own distinct personalities and also songs. The problem is they do become too dominant, and when Letty Lutz, the bearded lady played by Keala Settle, she does well enough, but she appears far too frequently. They're making the point that on the stage they were all equal, and from that point of view there was a certain egalitarianism about it. What it was, of course, was a freak show at that time and dreadful. But that doesn't make the fact that I got impatient with them. I'd liked, for example, the Swedish Nightingale. This is a soprano, Jenny Lind, played by Rebecca Ferguson. Her glorious voice made her world famous, and Barnum got the status he craved when he took her on tour in America. As his protege, Philip Carlyle, we've got Zac Efron, who I always like, and there's a touching interracial romance between him and the trapeze artist Ann Wheeler, played by Zendaya. Terrific love song, Rewrite the Stars, very, very memorable. And you don't get many spectacular musicals like this. I mean, there are very, very few. The songs by Benj Pasek and Justin Paul, often though not invariably tuneful and pleasing, and A Million Dreams I played a few times at home just to cheer me up. Not that I need that much cheering up, but I do like...
You've got your Thursday slots on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, Richard. I mean, really, that has to be the classic line from this.
You're quite right, though, but if you have a portrayal, and there's one or two flaws in this movie, subtle it ain't. My goodness, when they go to Buckingham Palace and you've got a dreadful Queen Victoria shrieking with mirth at some joke or other, the fact is she can be amused. Get it. I mean, that is painful.
If you've got lyricists by the people who worked on La La Land, what can you say? Clearly there's a message there. Does Hugh Jackman step into the shoes of Michael Crawford's stage incarnation there? That's the key thing.
I didn't see that, but I can tell you he's ideally cast here. This sprinkles some much-needed glitter during the festive season. It conveys the unique allure of show business with garishly colourful panache.
On that basis, David, will you be checking out The Greatest Showman, or is it a case of why check it out? I am The Greatest Showman. I am Dean of Transnational Education. Sorry.
I'm certainly that will be one to go and see over the Christmas period. Looking forward to that. Interesting. You mentioned about the use of people in the film, the bearded lady, and so on. And you know, you can still go to Los Angeles, Santa Monica Beach, and see those shows presented in a place that is particularly sensitive around issues like that.
Exactly.
It was a ghastly characteristic of a previous era. But there is a flaw in the movie because the bearded lady keeps cropping up with such alarming.
We've seen so in the trailer.
Alex has been running the trailer while we've been talking.
The point I take, but to make it as often as they do was unnecessary, but let's not quibble. Mm. When you've got charming songs, I do love something, I mean, that you can hum to, you could tap your feet to, that this sort of thing. There are quite a few numbers like that, and also, I mean, it's a couple of colourful extravaganza, and you've got three top-class stars.
Exactly. And not to preempt your predictions, Richard, but, I mean, are we looking at a multi-Oscar-winning candidate here? Is this the rare case of the musical that achieves the greatest award?
Not, I mean, there's no question when it comes to the Oscars, and I was going to say to Phil, I mean, and I'm sure he'd agree, in past years it wouldn't be difficult. Dunkirk would already be best picture in all but name because you've got everything. You've got the excellence of the movie in land, sea and air, different time zones, brilliant. You have Christopher Nolan, somebody who's not been recognised before. This movie is made £500 million. It's got a huge rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got every single
presses all the buttons, clearly. So, yeah.
And every button, and one wonders these days, the makeup of the Academy is changing. Whereas I believe Dunkirk will win. I think it deserves to win, and I think it should win in any year. It's not a question of the fact it would be the most expensive film since Gladiator 2 wins. Statistics are interesting, but what happened in past years won't necessarily count this year, with the Academy every year now having some 700 new members, in fact, and obviously it's far more diverse. I mean, my bet is it'll be Dunkirk, Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour at the Oscars, with Dunkirk winning drama and best film comedy, but best film drama at the Globes.
We will have those to collate together over the festive period, and certainly when we get back together in January, we'll see how close we actually are in terms of successful predictions.
We will do so, and we must now move to Molly's Game, a film you may well have heard of.
David, have you heard of Molly's Game?
I was looking to you, Alex, I'm afraid. That one's
there we are, you see. No. Obviously, on the sort of the lingua franca of Lincoln cultural ethos, Molly's Game has passed us by.
Well, it hasn't yet opened. It's opening on the 1st of January, and I have to say The Greatest Showman, by the way, opened yesterday. This is the story of someone who worshipped success. But this film, I mean, it's the talent it gives us is amazing. It's a really sad failure, because I have to admit it is scripted by Aaron Sorkin. Now, he did The Social Network. He did it with such skill. He directs here. And it's a disaster, because one of my favourite actresses, and I need to know where
it's
Alex
is. It's Jessica Chastain, it's Miss Marvel.
Where do you stand, Alex?
On Jessica Chastain? I wouldn't deem to stand on any part of Jessica Chastain. She's just a wonderful person, really.
Well, she is indeed. She is indeed. And here we have not only her, but also Idris Elba. And one of the, if you want an example of poor dialogue, take the exchanges between this Molly Bloom, a character who, in a man's world, goes into gambling, and it is a man's world. She is made a feminist in this movie, but it is also contrived. It's based on a true story, and if you see the way that she's indicted, if you have dialogue between her and her lawyer, Charlie Jaffe, played by Idris Elba. It is absolutely awful. This is not the way I think that two people would talk to each other. It's the way that Aaron Sorkin has decided to write a script. And the scene between her and her father, Larry, played by Kevin Costner, near the movie's climax, it's so mawkish, I thought it was ridiculous. Chastain plays a woman who triumphs in gambling, yet the impeccable liberal message the movie has to put out is that she's a feminist because she makes it on her own, albeit in an unconventional way. But what you've got to have is you've got to have characters you care about, and also people who seem real, not contrived. I mean, Idris Elba's just given wooden dialogue, and he's given rants, and it doesn't work.
But Richard, Idris has already done wooden dialogue in The Dark Tower earlier this year, probably the worst movie, for my mind, of the 2017 period. Jessica Chastain, you're saying that the last from Zero Dark Thirty and more has kind of not had the best script to work with here?
Well, of course, I've thought that she's been in several movies that I've always admired her. Zero Dark Thirty, I thought, was very good. We won't go into all the difficulties that movie
Kevin
had.
Costner as well.
Kevin Costner as well, but the problem is she fights
Robin
injury.
Prince
she
of fight,
she's a sporting star, and she builds up this gambling empire. And, I mean, her version of the American Dream, I fear, ends in arrest and subsequent trial. But it's told in so discordant a way. I mean, you've got so many flashbacks. And here's one of the problems. The vices of the super rich are portrayed in glossy visual style, and compelling enough for the first half, but then it starts becoming rather
I take
dull.
It, Richard, you're not rating this. David?
We've got to say this. There's too much. Are you into poker, either of you?
Usually, a good filming of poker can rescue quite a lot of films, in my view, if it's done well.
Casino, for instance.
Well, Yes,
exactly.
Paul Newman's been there, hasn't he? Yeah, quite a few. If a well-filmed poker game can possibly save a good film. We looked at each other earlier on, Richard, and I said, no, I've not heard of this. Actually, this has received the Cobham thumbs down already, because in my international travel, quite often on aeroplanes, films are there a little bit in advance of release.
Yes.
I have actually already decided not to watch this film, only based on this one sentence summary that popped up on the sort of 6x4 screen on the seat in front of me. I'm pleased you've confirmed that now, Richard. I won't be going out of my way or watching it on the next flight out to the Far East.
You would find, this is the poker for the uninitiated, but the players ought to be interesting. You've got characters there, and when they're wasted, you've also got, and here's the real problem, 2 hours and 20 minutes too. So you've got a dynamic...
That's almost as long as The Last Jedi.
Ah, well, now that. What did you think?
I still haven't seen it, Richard. I'm afraid other things cropped up. I will hope.
Well, there are queues outside the cinemas in Leicester Square with seeing in the IMAX screen, which is always a healthy sign. I mean, here we have a heroine, Molly. She beat men at their own game, but this movie's a loser all the way.
Well, Richard, what a way to actually wrap up 2017 from your contributions to the Madrid Drive Morning Edition. David, would you like to put those last two questions to Richard Fitzwilliams?
Well, Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic connections throughout 2017, not least today?
I most certainly have.
And will it be not too long until 2018 and you'll be connecting with us again?
Most certainly it will. When is it, Alex? What date?
The official date will be the 11th of January, but I think, as ever, we'll probably do a podcast special for your views on the birthday honours. I'm not sure whether David's actually getting his knighthood, but if he's not on the list, again, it'll be a robbery.
Of course, he probably hasn't said yet, you know. You can't...
No, precisely. I can't exactly say.
But now, mind you, there is a danger. There's a mole in the system in recent years, and every year or two, the likes of Barbara Windsor say, I mean, we heard about that. You may hear in the grapevine.
And it's the unexpectedness that makes life interesting. Happy holidays, Richard. Have a splendid time. Have a good Christmas and a splendid new year.
And the same to you and to listeners.
Our life together is so precious. Together we have grown. We have grown, although our love is still special. Let's take a chance and fly away somewhere alone.
It's been too long since we took the time. No one's to blame. My no time flies so quickly.
So clearly, if we actually are following the traditions of Christmas and we're looking to reward Santa Claus, we'll probably provide him with a mince pie and a character of Rudolph and a glass of milk and so on and so forth. But is this going to actually help our nation's health or indeed even Santa's health? Well, apparently not, because it would seem that over 9 million mince pies, 4 million biscuits and 16 million glasses of alcohol are laid out for Santa Claus on the 24th of December, Christmas Eve, of course. So to address the sort of issues related to this and, of course, maybe provide us with five top tips for the season to ensure that we remain in shape and sorted for 2018. We're delighted to welcome first the nutritional therapist extraordinaire Melissa Pearson. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
And the awesome Welsh rugby player extraordinaire, 87 caps. It can only be the amazingly talented Shane Williams, MBE. How are you, Shane?
Hi, how's it going?
Very good indeed. Now, Shane, as a rugby player, I mean, were mince pies part of your calorie intake? I suspect not.
No, only over Christmas. Obviously, we as everyone does, rugby players seem to leave themselves go a little bit over Christmas, and mince pies then come into the nutrition plan. But for 11 months of the year, unfortunately, they didn't.
Now, Melissa, I mean, clearly there is that notion about we're here to hopefully sort of not be party poopers and so on. But there are ways in which actually, if we're taking part in the overindulgent Christmas season, you don't want to feel bloated, you don't want to feel unhealthy, heavy and tired and so on. So what are the best ways to actually avoid the festive bulge?
Of course, yeah. I think the first and foremost, and what's most important to me, is trying to keep your daily habits as closely aligned as possible. So always eat breakfast. I think the reason being is because some studies show that eating breakfast, actually, if you do that, you have a more balanced weight than those who don't. I would say try and get as much protein in there as possible. And obviously, we get to go to many, many great Christmas parties. And I think the one thing that we overindulge is on canapés, and so canapés have about 100 calories each, which is quite surprising. And I think that if you do overindulge on the canapés, there's always healthier choices. So we can have the popcorn over the crisps, we can have the olives over the salted nuts, or we can eat before we go, and that will help to keep the bulge down a bit. We can also choose wisely when it comes to alcohol. So I think it's fair to say that every single one of us will be overindulging and increasing our alcohol intake over the festive period. So there are really good options out there for lower calories and lower carbohydrate focused alcoholic beverages. So one being Skinny Lager, which is new to the market. So it's a great full flavour beer, but it's also lower in calories, quite significantly so, and lower in carbohydrates as well. So happy all round for everyone, I think.
Shane, this year, of course, you completed the London Marathon, and it's fair to say that the amount of energy you put into your commentaries for international and domestic rugby will burn up the calories. But are you still conscious, in terms of your own lifestyle, about ensuring that you maintain the sort of sensible approach to the festive season that Melissa's just outlined?
Yeah, I think it's even, probably even more important now that I'm not playing rugby regularly or training every day, that, you know, that I do look after myself. And It's very difficult when you do retire from rugby. What are you going to do next? And, you know, my dad's a big man. So when I look at him, sometimes I think, okay, perhaps I don't want to be as big as dad after I've retired. So, you know, Christmas time can be very dangerous for myself. I, you know, as does everyone else, really. You do overindulge. You do put the calories on. And unfortunately, January and February is catch-up time where you're training like anything just to get back to what you were in November. So even more so now, I seem to look after myself. And yes, I indulge and I do eat and I do drink, and it is Christmas after all, but probably more so now, I need to be a bit more careful.
I suppose we really want to avoid giving great news to all of the gym memberships that we take out in January to sort of say, well, we're going to get it all sorted out, and then kind of they fall by the wayside with other New Year's resolutions. We're often heard about the notions of having rest and restful periods and so on. It's quite interesting to find, Melissa, that sleep is actually something which we put as a priority, really, because that's also not a case of sorting out the diet. Sleep deprivation can cause people to overeat the next day.
Yeah, absolutely. So I liken sleep to, or lack of, sleep debt, what I like to call. So a bit like credit card debt, if you don't pay it off, it keeps racking up. Basically, with sleep, if we don't sleep, we may potentially overeat the next day, up to 350 calories more. And what we tend to do is we opt for high sugar, high salt foods, as opposed to fruits and vegetables. So if you do have a chance this Christmas, then I would definitely recommend as much sleep as possible. I think that the minimum being probably 7 to 8 hours a night, and hopefully we can balance weight and feeling bloated and that sort of thing with that sort of stuff.
Was that something that coaches would actually say to your good self, Shane, when you were actually playing, that downtime and rest time was just as important in terms of the concentrated activities you get involved with?
Yeah, rest time was massively important as a professional rugby player, well, a professional sportsman, I'd say, really. You know, obviously when you're training for 4, 5, 6 hours of the day, you know, we were regularly told that, look, you're better off getting to bed nice and early, getting the hours in, getting up fresh and early in the morning, then having your breakfast, as Melissa's alluded to, and preparing for the next day. And, you know, we were told the recovery was as important as training sometimes. And that's why sometimes we were given a day off in the week so we could recover a little bit more. So sleep was massive as a rugby player. And I was very thankful for that, because I can sleep for Wales as well, to be honest with you.
Well, we will return briefly to Skinny Lager, of course, because they've come up with this possible partial solution in terms of reducing the calorie intake as far as booze is actually concerned. Best websites to go to, Melissa, to actually find out more details about Skinny Lager, or indeed these key things we'll be talking about today.
Yeah, so you can go to skinnybrands.co.uk. You can find out as much information there.
Well, clearly, I feel as though we've had the Welsh representation, we've had the Irish representation, we've had the English representation. It's a pity the Scots have finished bottom again. Oh, sorry, Scotland. Just lied with that. We won't go into the wooden spoon. It's been fabulous touching base with both of your good selves today. Have you both had a nutritionally satisfying telephonic phone link with us today, Shane and Melissa?
Yes, I have. Thank you very
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely.
Good.
You.
Excellent. Well, hopefully we look forward to welcoming you again in 2018. For the moment, though, Melissa Pearson and Shane Williams, MBE, we salute you. Take care now. Excellent. Of course, we also left out the Geordies, which is why Ian Lennox comes in. How are you, Ian?
Well, I'm recovering. I've been pretty ill last week or so.
Ian, last week you shared the tale of how, en route to actually see another defeat by your team, Newcastle United, you actually slipped and fell and actually crashed down, kissing the pavement of the streets of Newcastle. Now you've got a cold. This is not good enough, Ian. I mean, you know, it's bad enough Phil Leonis being under the weather and in pain in Los Angeles. I mean, I'm sure Dr. David Cobham, Dean of Transnational Education, you will agree. We need to keep our midweek drive-outs fairly fit, really.
Well, yes, it's a difficult time of year, though, wasn't it? Was this weather related, Ian, or
I think it's a stupidity on my part. Really, I've been ill for off and on for about 5 or 6 weeks, and then every so often I go to a football match and then I have 4 hours in the cold.
And if you're following Newcastle United, what do you expect, man? For goodness sakes! I mean, I'm looking at the Sunday Sun, a Northern edition here, with Ashley Fields fans' wrath in defeat. So say no more, because obviously it's just too painful for Ian, and I don't want to actually open up old wounds, frankly, David.
Oh, yes, you do.
I'd much rather open up the darts.
Every possibility of a promotion season, though, that's always the thing that to cling on to, isn't it?
First to get promotion, got to go down first, of course.
good thinking, David. That could be part of the long-term strategy, you see.
That's right.
There's a distinct possibility, right?
David, your question about Ian, obviously our sporting correspondent.
Yes, well, at this time, I know you like your sport, Ian. I mean, this time of year, are you a follower of the darts?
I'm not really. It's one of those games, a bit like snooker. Once I start getting, watching it, it becomes almost hypnotic, and I tend to watch it. But I don't actually pursue it. I don't know. I mean, I've played pub darts. It's a very, very skillful game. But for me, it's not a sport. It's a pub game.
I think we were talking. I mean, I raised this with Alex a little bit earlier, because I went to Alexandra Palace last weekend and joined in the festivities there. And it's an interesting. I think you're right. It's difficult to call it a sport, isn't it? But I think the interesting thing for me is the whole sort of scoring system and how, you know, the games can sort of ebb and flow. It's a little bit like tennis in the sense that you have games and sets and actually very small changes at certain key points in the match can tip the balance one way and another. And
that's,
I think, coupled with all that incredible mental agility,
180
around the scoring,
Ian Urisquire, 95.
Now, I think obviously, and also talking to you, Ian, it brings back memories of the wonderful Sid Waddell and the fantastic commentaries. And I think a lot of Dart's success is probably down to him.
Somebody on Sky yesterday described Sid Waddell as the best sports commentator ever.
Yeah,
and I know what he meant. He had a completely individual style. And he's just fascinating to listen to him, actually.
And a very, very clever man as well, as we
all
know.
Oh, an Oxford degree man.
That's right.
I met his wife. She was when I was working in television, she was a producer director for Yorkshire Television. And a very nice lady she was, too. She, she was absolutely suited for him because she was a lady who was calm
Could balance out his enthusiasm.
More excitable times. Exactly.
Yeah.
He had the perfect CV. He was the lad who had lamped Terry Hart, the hard man of the Premier League. He didn't want to work in an office. He didn't want to work on a building site. And anyway, he was scared of heights. It came to him in a flash. He'd be a doorman. Just a few words from Ian's latest novel, which astonishingly, David, is actually available for £1.99 English pennies, because he wanted to sell it for less than that. We said it's ridiculous, but it's Bare Knuckle from all Amazon Kindle devices and indeed other lines as well. There we are. That's an image of actually
fantastic.
Glenn McCrory's fist on there.
I can't tell you how much I enjoyed the net, Ian. I'm sorry to.
Oh, really?
Yes, absolutely. And I shall definitely. I shall be reading that.
Yes. Yeah, it's a good one to actually sort of work your way through. So you see. Another Salian. We're doing it. One reader at a time.
One guest at a time. Exactly. We're picking
yes. Exactly.
Can you all get sunray guests at one side?
Sometimes we really do wonder. Anyway, this is basically the last one, Ian, before, of course, you have the opportunity to see Pep Guardiola's team perform at St. James Park. I won't go any further. Let's just hopefully keep the good run going, really. It was nice to see another penalty win with Claudio Bravo making another wonderful save. And how wonderful it was to see Bristol City do so well, beating that other side from Manchester, and therefore at least Jose Mourinho could share out.
Sorry to also bring up the fact that only 12 years ago, Alex, my team Southend United beat Manchester United in the same competition, and I have to say we still have a 100% record against Manchester United.
These are the sort of happy routines that are there in so many ways. So, Southend, to give it its authentic
thank
sort
you.
Of sign.
I appreciate
there.
The local dialect. Thank you very much.
There's not many can say that, you know.
Well, we're South Shields to Southend today.
Exactly.
Yes.
I didn't actually sort of work with the head of News for Essex Radio without knowing how to get into the vernacular with those whole things.
Absolutely.
So, Tim Gillett, happy Christmas. Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic series of links with us here in 2017?
Yes, I have. Yes, I enjoyed it.
Good. So, despite occasionally he goes curmudgeonly, I was thinking, should I play Scrooge? No, he's all right. We're sending positive vibes to your good self. Will you be up for joining us again? Ooh, probably January the 11th when we're back in 2018.
Oh, yes, I hope so.
Well, that's jolly good indeed. Up after the news, we'll be talking to psychologist Emma Kenny, because it would seem that festive joy actually peaks before the 25th. And obviously they've started with the drilling outside, though. You can hear it sort of just gradually sort of echoing, sort of slight notion there. A new study has revealed a roller coaster of emotion that Brits experience in the Christmas season. The 12 rows of Christmas are actually revealed in terms of what sort of things they're faced with and where these things are coming from. That's all coming up after the news from the Sky News Centre. But Ian Lennox, keep warm, stay warm. How are Ollie and Obo? Are they well?
Yes, I think so, yes.
Good, good. Well, we will see you in 2018. We salute you, sir. Take care now.
Thank you.